This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Now a hair growth product with natural ingredients and fast results. Reveal from GCNLife.com.
Black holes, the cosmos, space and time travel, science and technology, brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku,
and GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. On Science Fantastic, we profile the amazing, jaw-dropping scientific discoveries which are revolutionizing our world and touching our lives. And today we're going to talk about one of the most controversial topics hitting the headlines, and that is artificial intelligence. With us today is an expert in artificial intelligence. He has a PhD, in fact, in the field, Dr. George Zarkadakis, author of an exciting new book. The book is called In Our Own Image, Savior or Destroyer, The History and Future of Artificial Intelligence. And we should also say once again that he has a PhD in the field of artificial intelligence. And, get this, he was awarded a knighthood by the French government for his international work in science communication. So once again, in this hour, we'll be talking about robots. Are they really a boon for humanity, or are they really going to be the destroyer of humanity? And at what point will machines become conscious? Also, by the way, let me point out that you should go to my website to find out more information. The website is mkaku.org, mkaku.org. You can also go to my Facebook site at Michio Kaku. We have 3 million fans on Facebook. Or Twitter, we have about 600,000 fans on Twitter. And if you go to my website, you can see the 4 New York Times bestsellers that I've written. One of them is Physics of the Impossible, talking about what might happen perhaps in the next 500 years into the future when we might have ray guns and starships and things like that. Also, my latest bestseller, The Future of Humanity, talking about the space program and what it would take to one day colonize the galaxy. So we're going to be talking about interstellar flight, immortality, aliens from outer space, and all that stuff in my latest book, also a New York Times bestseller, The Future of Humanity. But in this hour, we're going to focus on one of the hottest topics hitting the press, and that is artificial intelligence. We're way beyond the point where we simply have toys that simply move like a human being. No, we're talking about the job market. We're talking about the nature of our society. What happens when robots enter our living room? What about society itself? And we have a debate between 2 billionaires. We have on one hand Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, who says that artificial intelligence will give us a bounty of prosperity. New jobs, new industries, new opportunities with artificial intelligence. And then we have another billionaire, Elon Musk, who says, well, not so fast. You see, because one day the robots may turn on us, and that poses an existential threat. An existential threat to humanity itself. In other words, are we creating, in some sense, our evolutionary successors by creating robots? Well, we'll discuss all these things with our special guest, Dr. George Zarkadakis. Well, George, the first question that we always ask our guests is, how did you, as a youth, now as a kid, first get interested in science? What propelled you in that direction?
Of course, and thank you very much for inviting me to your show, Professor Kaku. So you see, I was I was sort of grew up during the Apollo program, space program. So, you know, I was a young kid, completely fascinated with the fact that we could send people on the moon to land and walk around. So I thought that was absolutely amazing. And I believe that was the beginning of my sort of journey into science and indeed engineering. I wanted to become a space engineer initially. I wanted to be the one who would send people up in space and maybe, you know, jump on one of the spaceships myself one day. So that's how my fascination with science began.
And what steered you in the direction of mathematics, computer science, and then to get a PhD in artificial intelligence?
Oh, absolutely. So I started my studies in the field of control engineering precisely because I was very keen to understand how space flight could be made possible. And I guess one thing led to another. I was introduced into artificial intelligence by several people at my university. It was like in the 80s, and there was a lot of debate around what would be the next step in AI and whether we should build systems based on the human cognition architecture, like how the human brain works, or whether we should build another kind of system. I thought that debate was brilliant. And I was also interested to understand the human mind. So I thought, hey, what a great way to understand the human mind through engineering, and that's artificial intelligence. So that's how I sort of led gradually into AI. I did several projects at university, sort of stopped building my first systems, and then decided to, you know, continue with a PhD.
Okay, well, your book, In Our Own Image, differs from other books in artificial intelligence because, first of all, it starts with the history, the ancient history, the history going back all the way to the Greeks, where we have myths, we have mythologies about robots, and perhaps every society has some myth or other of our interactions with things which are mechanical and come to life. For example, Pygmalion, which eventually became the Broadway musical My Fair Lady, is about the whole idea of a statue coming to life. And we have the mythology of Pandora. Pandora, in one version of the myth, was actually a robot created by Vulcan. So explain to us, and also explain why it's so embedded in our ancient mythology, the whole idea of artificial life.
Absolutely. So in my book, I try to trace this idea, this quite curious idea of human beings creating artifacts with minds, artifacts that look like them, artifacts with whom they have conversations and, in fact, build relationships as well. So I thought that's a curious idea. Where does that thing come from? And as I was looking into the past, I saw great similarities between this idea and how we create art in general, how we create, let's say, an image of something. And when we observe this image, we automatically project our own minds into what we see. For example, when we see the portrait of a person, or when we see a statue, or indeed when we see a play, how we, separate ourselves from reality, and we imagine that the people on stage are who they pretend to be. So that's a very curious, if you like, aspect of the human cognitive system that has a name. It's called theory of mind. It's what we do as we grow beyond the age of 3 years old, in fact, and when we understand that other people have minds as well. So this sort of cognitive, if you like, aspect of our intelligence is what kicked in several thousand years ago when we started creating art. And automatically, if you like, spontaneously, we started, you know, creating images of ourselves, first with statues, and as mythology progressed, we started imagining those statues coming alive. We imagined gods creating artificial beings, like Hephaestus, the god of, or Vulcan, as he's called in Latin, creating iron maidens that helped him in Olympus to create his wonderful inventions, and so on and so forth. So there's a long history, both in ancient Greece and other cultures, as you mentioned, of humans and gods creating artificial beings. And then this story stories sort of, you know, were reshaped down the line, let's say in the 19th century, 18th, 19th century, by the Romantic writers, and in more modern times into films, like, you know, all the films we love. You know.
Okay, George, we're going to have to take a short commercial break, but after the break, we're going to continue a discussion of your new book, In Our Own Image, Savior or Destroyer, the History and Future of Artificial Intelligence. And you are listening to Science Fantastic. Give us a call at 612-564-8135, and maybe you can get on national radio.
Bags under the eyes, crow's feet, fine lines and wrinkles are things adults complain about as they age. Now, there's Instantly Ageless. It works in minutes and is great for men and women.
I've probably noticed in the past 5 years that my eyes have gained a lot of fine lines, wrinkles, my crow's feet have gotten deeper. Wow, I was hoping for 5 years, but that's like what my eyes looked like 10 years ago.
That is really cool. Wrinkle gone?
It's easy. Just put it on your finger and go.
Now I wish I had more down here because I can still see one wrinkle. It's bugging me.
I am a little bit emotional. I'm turning 40. I didn't think would be a big deal to me, but that looks like the me that I feel like inside instead of what I see when I look in the mirror.
Try Instantly Ageless today at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com. 30-day money-back guarantee and preferred price discount at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Lockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. LockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at LockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. LockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Introducing Reveal from GCNLife.com. Beverly Hills dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman invented Reveal, which contains polypeptides with natural botanicals and no parabens, sulfates, silicones, or dyes for a salon-quality hair growth product, Reveal. Here's Dr. Newman.
I've treated a lot of patients who lose their hair and they lose their confidence. We've created a unique set of polypeptides, which we call HPT6. The HPT6 contains the polypeptides from six different plants. The scalp infusion treatment should be used on wet or dry scalp. The Reveal hair care system is designed to be used for men and women alike.
Get Reveal at GCNLife.com with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So try Reveal today at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637. Plus a discount up to 25% off for Reveal at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Today our special guest is Dr. George Zarkadakis, author of a new book about robots. How dangerous are they? Are they going to give us a new wave of prosperity and jobs, or will they spell our doom? The book is called In Our Own Image, Savior or Destroyer, the History and Future of Artificial Intelligence. Now, George, in your book, you go one step farther than and other people who talk about the history of artificial intelligence, where many societies have mythologies about creating a golem or a mechanical Pandora. You say that it is genetically hardwired into our brains, that we are in some sense compelled to do this. So how do you argue the fact that our desire to create artificial life is in some sense genetically hardwired into our brain?
So this has to do, I guess, with our evolution. It is very important that we have this cognitive function in order to be able to relate with each other. So all the things that we have with regards to social consciousness, with regards to empathy, with regards to feeling for one another comes from this very fundamental part of a human brain. And indeed, it's precise sort of faculty, if you like, of the mind that makes us project our own minds into the modern facets of artificial intelligence. Like, for instance, you know, when you speak to a digital assistant, certainly that digital assistant is very well made. You think that there might be a human being behind it. It's that sort of relationship that plays with our brain and with our mind every time we interact with an artificial intelligence system.
Okay, let's talk about the movies now, because you have a whole section about the movies. One of the first silent movies ever made was called Metropolis. It is a science fiction movie about creating a woman robot. In fact, a very attractive woman robot that then goes to mislead the masses of workers to create a revolution against the working class. It's an incredible movie, far ahead of its time. So do you think, therefore, that in science fiction and the movies, we basically convey our hopes, dreams, and fears of artificial intelligence?
Most certainly. Absolutely. I think this movie was also a product of its time, a product of a time in human civilization where there was, in many ways, many similarities than today. People were seeing the mechanization of work in a massive way. Big factories were being built in North America and in Europe. Assembly lines were put in place. Workers would find themselves, you know, being part of a machine system rather than, you know, the previous sort of ways that we had to produce value, which were more humane, if you like, more social. So all this, if you like, dehumanization of human work was quite shocking and led to all kinds of ideas about the future, including what will happen if, you know, humans would be subjects of more powerful robots. So you see, this idea that we are discussing today in the 21st century was an idea very much that was born out of the previous industrial revolution, where, you know, the assembly line became the core, the most basic way that we start producing our goods in the Western world.
Okay, now you also go to the movie Blade Runner, a classic movie, where there is an ambiguity between who is human and who is not human. And when you leave the movie theater after watching Harrison Ford on the silver screen, you begin to wonder, is Harrison Ford also a robot? So explain to us the ambiguities in the movie Blade Runner.
Absolutely. So Blade Runner was based on a short story by the author Philip Dick. And Philip Dick's work is all about this ambiguity. So he imagined a future where we have developed a technology that creates human-like androids of such amazing similarity that we can't tell the difference. And the obvious conclusion from that hypothetical world is, of course, paranoia. So in a world that you are unable to distinguish between who's a human and who's not, the end result is paranoia. And in fact, this paranoia turns back to you as well. For instance, how do you know that you're a human? And that's one aspect of Blade Runner, I think, that's been rarely discussed, because the Blade Runner himself is not sure at the end if he's one of the androids that he's, hunting down.
Okay, now, then the question is, well, is this a good thing or a bad thing? If you take a look at The Wizard of Oz, we had the Tin Man. And the Tin Man was benevolent, and all the Tin Man wanted to do was to become human and have a heart. Then we have Data, from Star Trek, The Next Generation. Data is, well, has superhuman intelligence, but what does he want? He wants to have emotions. He wants to be like a human. So, on the other hand, we have The Terminator, where Arnold Schwarzenegger has no intention of becoming a human. All he sees when he sees a human is a victim. So, what are your thoughts now about what happens when computers become much more intelligent and more human-like?
So I think those examples that you've just given show the tension, if you like, between two different narratives that we have around AI and around robots. One is a very positive narrative. You know, you mentioned the movies. I can think of AI as well by Spielberg and, you know, the original Pinocchio story as well. The artifact wanted to become human, to become like human. And then you have this very negative, this very dark story where, you know, we create an artifact and this is a hubris. This is something that we should not be doing. We are challenging God, the gods, if you like, and that turns against us. And you can trace that dark narrative in even in Frankenstein, the story of Frankenstein. So we have those two different angles, if you like, by which we're trying to interpret both our emotions and views and also get a glimpse of the future. So I think, you know, if we do away with the narratives and try to be more rational and more clear about what AI will become in the future, then I'm very much of an optimist. I think, I guess I'm an engineer, that's why I'm an optimist, but I think it is up to us to shape AI so that it becomes the good AI rather than the bad AI. So it's how will we design it, how we build it, and how we adopt it that are keys to developing the kind of technology that would be beneficial to humankind rather than the opposite.
Okay, now let's talk about the reality. We talked about Hollywood, and there's a movie, 2001, which features the robot HAL, which was supposed to be as realistic as you can possibly imagine for the year 2001. The movie came out around 1968, and some people say that Arthur C. Clarke, he was way off. We are far, far from being able to create a robot called HAL that can pilot a spaceship all the way out to Jupiter, that can talk like an ordinary human being, and even masquerade as a human being if he felt like. So the question is, how are we today? Our robots, some people say, have the intelligence of a cockroach. So should we be worried about them when robots have the intelligence of a bug? And the robot HAL is still many, many decades into the future. What's the state of robotics today?
Okay, so I think it's not really helping very much. If we think of, if we project, you know, evolutionary terms onto robotic sort of development, because it's completely different. So robots do not sort of self-develop. So let me try to respond to the question that you put across. So we see, because of a technique in artificial intelligence called deep learning, some amazing advances in the field. We see, for example, you know, machines being able to recognize faces, to recognize human faces or recognize images, understand human language, being able to respond. We also see systems like, for example, AlphaGo, being able to beat humans in a very, very complex game called Go, which is very, very popular, as you know, in the Far East. So we see there's amazing advances. However, there are certain limitations. There really are some amazing limitations. So despite the hype around AI, there's some very big problems that AI has not solved yet. And I'll just mention two that I think are very, very important. One is common sense, and the other one is, I guess, self-awareness or consciousness. So unless we find a way to solve for those two problems, and they are huge problems, I don't believe that we're even close to having, to worry about whether AI will, you know, turn against us and destroy us.
Okay, George, we have to take another short commercial break, but after that, we're going to continue a discussion of your new book. The book is called In Our Own Image, and we are talking about artificial intelligence. After the break, we're going to talk about the job market. What does it mean when robots enter the workplace? Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call. The hotline number is 612-564-8135, and maybe you can have your thoughts heard on national radio.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Rick Vincent.
Democrats on the House Oversight Committee are demanding the White House turn over documents related to how the Trump administration handled security clearances for advisors, including Jared Kushner. Democratic Congressman Mark DeSantis of California was asked on CNN if Kushner should be subpoenaed if he doesn't respond.
Of course. I think this is a period where the White House is testing us, but this is the way we are supposed to act.
A New York Times story said that Trump ordered his former chief of staff, John Kelly, to provide Kushner with a clearance. Speaking at the Conservative Political Action Conference in Maryland, White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow says the U.S. has gone from pessimism to optimism due to the current administration.
He has ended the war on business. He has ended the war on energy. He has ended the war on success.
Major chain stores Gap, JCPenney, Victoria's Secret, and Foot Locker all announced massive closures totaling more than 465 stores over the past 48 hours. That'll bring the number of planned store closures this year to well over 4,500. You're listening to USA Radio News.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Every hiring manager knows that a company is only as good as the people it's made from. So where do you find the best people? That may surprise you.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
This is talent worth knowing about.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
If you owe money to the IRS, you need to hear this. The IRS is cracking down on those who owe back taxes. It starts with a devastating letter, and if you don't act immediately, you could find yourself having your wages garnished or have a lien placed on your property. But there's a solution. Tax 10,000 can help. Avoid enforced compliance, where these holds on your income and seizure of your home could become a nightmare that just won't end. Call 800-239-9957 now and speak to one of our experts. 800-239-9957 is the number to link you directly to a tax resolution specialist who will negotiate with the IRS on your behalf. Working through the IRS Fresh Start program, all the forms will be handled for you. All you have to do is make the toll-free call. 800-239-9957. Find out if you qualify and possibly save yourself thousands of dollars, not to mention a lot of headaches. It could be the best call you've made today. That number again, 800-239-9957. The service does not provide tax settlement or legal services. We will refer you to a company that does provide such services. Often the IRS will not agree to any reduction in the amount owed. Not all taxpayers who owe more than $10,000 will qualify for a tax reduction program.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGdirect.com.
Do you have a family? Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you a $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-919-5435. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-919-5435. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-919-5435. 1-800-919-5435.
Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, in this hour, we're talking about, well, one of the hottest topics hitting the business section of the newspaper. We're talking about robots and jobs, and will one day a robot take your job? But with us today is Dr. George Zarkadakis. He has a PhD in the field of artificial intelligence. He's the author of a new book, In Our Own Image, Savior or Destroyer, the History and Future of Artificial Intelligence. Well, George, let's say we take away all the hype, all the Hollywood imagery of Terminator robots, and look at the actual state of the art today. Isn't it true, for example, that a robot would have a hard time picking up garbage? Every piece of garbage is different, non-repetitive at all. You have to distinguish between good garbage and bad garbage. So sanitation men, some people feel, will have jobs for many a year into the future, or police. You have to go into the mind of a criminal. Robots can't do that, right? Or fixing a toilet. Every toilet is different. Every break is different. And a carpenter, a construction worker. These are non-repetitive, semi-skilled jobs. And the question is, are they relatively safe from robots replacing their job anytime soon?
I think the way to start thinking about this problem is, instead of thinking in terms of jobs, to start thinking in terms of tasks. Instead of thinking about a whole job, let's say the janitor, think about what does a janitor do, for example, or think what the doctor is actually doing, and breaking down with tasks. Because what we see and what is happening already is that intelligent systems like artificial intelligence and sometimes robotics replace and automate some tasks within the job, but not the whole job. So to your point, it's very unlikely or even desirable that one wants to build a complex robot to completely replace a human being doing a complex job. What is likely to happen, and what has been happening in fact for many decades with information technology, is the digitalization of many, many tasks. That is, the transformation of physical tasks that we do into lines of code that run on server farms. So we see that happening, and there's a lot of incentive for something like that happening. You know, you can increase productivity, you have more efficient processes, and so on and so forth. So to your point about what's going to happen to our jobs, so there's a lot of research right now. The research that we do in the company that I work for points to the fact that the most likely scenario would be the augmentation of human creativity. That means that human beings and intelligent machines working side by side for the best possible outcomes, rather than machines completely replacing humans. So this is probably the most likely scenario, at least for the next, let's say, 10 to 15 years, given the rate that technology is advancing.
Well, in Asia, for example, they have robots that can replace waiters, robots that can cook. In fact, they can make noodles in 1 minute and 29 seconds. Robots that can become like receptionists as they greet you when you check into a hotel. So some people say that jobs that are semi-repetitive, that require the same task over and over and over again, those jobs really could be replaced in the future. Take a look at Amazon. Amazon is already looking at the retailer and looking at the question of whether or not you can replace the person that you talk to when you walk into a store and ask simple questions. So what are your recommendations? If somebody comes up to you and says, what kinds of jobs should I train for in the future? Would you say jobs that are involve the mind, creativity, jobs that involve higher education? What advice would you give to a young person? Well, we have to take another short commercial break, but after the break, I'll ask you that question. A young person going to college today, there are dead-end jobs, but what jobs should they pursue? Once again, this is Science Fantastic. Our special guest is George Zarkadakis. The book is called In Our Own Image, about robots and you. Stay tuned.
The United States of Empire is a book that claims the United States is the empire of the world. George Washington had warned us against foreign wars. The United States of Empire shows that World Wars I and II left England broken. Its former colony, the U.S., had to save the empire. Was there ever a vote? Who do we fight for? The Deep State began with World War I. The United States of Empire by James Dunn. Available at Amazon Books.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Our special guest today is Dr. George Zarkadakis. He has a PhD in artificial intelligence, author of a new exciting book, In Our Own Image. And the question for you is, well, if a young kid comes up to you and says, well, doctor, I'm going to go to college and I want to know what to major in. What should I do? For example, if you work in a law firm, lawyers will probably have jobs in the future because they have to interact with juries and judges and understand ethics, which change constantly. But paralegals who simply look up precedents in a textbook, search engines can replace those jobs. So what do you tell a young person who comes up to you and says, what kinds of jobs should I study for in college?
So to that question, I can only answer that, you know, most of the professions that exist today did not exist, let's say, 10 years ago. So the economy is creating completely new jobs as technology is kicking in, as businesses change, as everything changes. So the only way you can hedge your future, in fact, is being able to unlearn and learn as quickly as you can. All of us, and certainly, you know, younger people, will probably change many, many careers in their lives. They have to, if you like, pivot their careers again and again every now and then. So being able to learn new skills and upskill yourself very quickly, it would be essential. Now, having said that, what we see clearly is that what businesses require more and more are people that are able to combine, if you like, different types of knowledge and different types of skills and competencies. Like, for instance, you know, you really need to have a good grounding on STEM subjects. There's no question about that. Absolutely. You need to understand science, technology, engineering, and math. But at the same time, it helps a lot if you understand, you know, if you have a good grasp of the English language, if you know history and sociology, if you have a good grasp of the humanities as well, and you can bring that knowledge to bear into solving complex business problems. So I think that polymath that can unlearn and learn would be the successful professional of the future, if I can put it in a nutshell.
Okay. Well, I once had a conversation with a stockbroker who said that he's a middleman, and of course, robots can replace middlemen, especially a broker. However, even though you can buy stocks on your wristwatch today and don't even need a stockbroker, people come up to him because they want something that robots cannot provide. They want experience, know-how, savvy. They want the gossip. They want the experience of somebody who's been trading stocks for many, many years. They want innovation. They want leadership. And this intellectual skill is very difficult for robots. And he says that's what he sells. He no longer really sells stocks, because you can buy that on your wristwatch. You want advice, learned advice. Intellectual capital is what he sells. So what are your thoughts about middlemen who try to no longer sell what they usually sell, like airplane tickets, but instead sell intellectual capital? That is advice, experience, know-how, savvy, the rumors of what's happening on the market, things that robots cannot do at all. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. You're so right. And your friend actually has diagnosed, you know, the future very, very, very well indeed, because that's exactly what's happening. And it's, in my opinion, a good thing. Essentially what those systems do is they take away all those tasks that are, in fact, very low-level tasks. That's why they're being automated. And that's a good thing, because that means that, you know, people of experience can leverage that experience to do more valuable and high-level tasks, like, to your point, you know, advise people about the correct strategy for their investment, sit down with them and understand more about, you know, their appetite for risk, for example, make sure that they are successful in their investments in that particular example. So I think that's where the opportunity really is. AI, artificial intelligence, can be a cognitive multiplier for human creativity and productivity. And that's how businesses are already trying to shape the jobs of the future. That's where they see the opportunity in leveraging technology in order to have better business outcomes. And that's why there will be such a massive impact on work as well. But in my opinion, it will be mostly positive. It's not going to be all positive, definitely not, but it will be mostly positive. And it will require from, I guess, most of us to continuously retrain and reskill in the next few years.
Okay, now let me ask you the big question, the question that everyone wants to know the answer to. And we'll talk about that after the break, and that is what happens when robots become as smart as us. Will they replace us? Will there be a singularity where we become an evolutionary piece of dust? Well, let's take a short commercial break, and after the break, we'll talk about the question, are they potentially dangerous? Once again, our special guest today is Dr. George Zarkadakis. The book is called In Our Own Image, and you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free Reputation reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Hi, I'm Marcia Miller from Mud Pie. Every new parent dreams of bringing their baby home for the first time. But some babies are born too sick or too soon to come home right away. That's why Mud Pie supports the life-saving research and programs of the March of Dimes, the leading nonprofit organization for pregnancy and baby health. Help us give every baby a fighting chance so that more babies can come home healthy. Learn how at marchofdimes.org.
Know someone with a drinking or drug problem? Learn how to get sober after we share these stories.
I was 35 with two beautiful children when my life and addiction started to spiral out of control. After my divorce, I went into a depression cycle and started drinking more often and using prescription drugs. After my second DWI and arrest, my ex-husband threatened to take our children away from me.
I was 17 when I became addicted to heroin and meth. I thought I could quit on my own, but I couldn't. It hit me when I was arrested.
Get sober now. Your private insurance may cover costs, and we'll get you here. It's simple. Just call Elite Rehab Placement right now. Please, don't wait. Your life matters to us.
800-213-9264. 800-213-9264. 800-213-9264. Call right now before it's too late. 800-213-9264.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. danpilla.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us today is a PhD in artificial intelligence, Dr. George Zarkadakis, author of a new book called In Our Own Image, Savior or Destroyer, The History and Future of Artificial Intelligence. Well, let me ask you the key question. Some people say that robots will never, never approach human intelligence. In fact, there's a physicist, Roger Penrose, a colleague of mine, who says that the brain is quantum mechanical and therefore can never be approximated by transistors and traditional robot digital technology. Then we have other people who've been on the show, Ray Kurzweil, another acquaintance of mine, who says, ha, robots are not only going to surpass us, one day they may even take over. They'll have children that are smarter than they, and they will proliferate ever-increasing intelligence with each generation until they take over the entire Earth. In fact, maybe the Earth will one day become a robot. Well, what are your thoughts? Is it possible to build a mechanical man and a mechanical woman? If so, can we create one that's even smarter than the previous generation? What are your thoughts?
So my thoughts are that this is a question that is absolutely impossible to answer right now. And I'm afraid that I have to give you a more nuanced answer than all your previous interviewees. And the reason why I'm giving this answer is because obviously there's a lot of debate around this subject and should be, and this is a very, you know, important question to ask with all kinds of technology. I mean, think back, you know, of nuclear energy. You know, here's a technology that can destroy us, of course. And now we have artificial intelligence. Now, the problem with that particular question is that we don't really understand what human intelligence is. I mean, we have some ideas, I guess, from neurobiology, from psychology. But when it comes to engineering, we have no idea whatsoever. And for instance, you know, MIT is setting up intelligent quest to understand human intelligence in engineering terms, because this is a huge gap. So when you speak about artificial intelligence, sort of reaching human level intelligence, I would submit that this sentence in itself does not make sense right now for any engineer. What we have managed to achieve with technology is create systems that can solve for very narrow problems, like what I mentioned before about recognizing faces, understand human language, that kind of problems we can solve. But when you think about, you know, simple tasks that a little baby can do, like a little toddler can do, for instance, you know, understand the world without anyone explaining the world to them, being able to solve problems completely using first principles, then we're talking about a completely different kind of intelligence that we have yet to understand, even if that intelligence is ours. So unless we can unpack human intelligence, unless we can break it down, if ever such thing is possible, then I'm afraid this question will remain unanswered.
Okay. Well, let me give you my spin on the whole subject, and then, you know, you can take it anywhere you want. My own personal opinion is that robots today have the intelligence of a cockroach. They can barely navigate in a room. They can't hide, find mates, find food, find shelter. Even a cockroach can do that. You put a robot in the forest, and the robot simply gets lost. However, it's only a matter of time before robots become as smart as a mouse. And then as a rat, smart as a rabbit, cat, dog, and maybe by the end of the century, as smart as a monkey. At that point, they could be potentially dangerous, because monkeys do have a well-defined sense of self-awareness. Monkeys have their own agenda. They have their own point of view. They know they're not humans. At that point, I think that when robots have self-awareness, that is, the self-awareness of a monkey, we should put a chip in their brain to shut them off. Because they could have murderous thoughts. They have self-awareness. They could have goals completely different from our goals. They could create their own goals, in fact. And so we should put a fail-safe system in them to shut them off. Now, then the next question is, what happens in the next century when robots can remove their own fail-safe system? They can remove all the chips that would shut them off if they have murderous thoughts. What happens then? Well, this is science fiction, of course. At this point, I think we should merge with them. Instead of fighting them, why not merge with them and become superhuman? Why not use all the capabilities of cybernetics and biotechnology to create superhumans? But anyway, that's my thinking. So what are your thoughts? Because you've obviously thought about this. You've seen all the science fiction movies. What are your thoughts?
So I think on principle, I don't think that, you know, theoretically speaking, if nature has managed to evolve things called brains that are conscious and intelligent, then I don't see any reason why we could not sort of engineer something like that, something that has a mind and perhaps something that is self-aware. So I don't know how we're going to do it. As I said before, I have no idea, and I don't think anyone does. But let's think of that. I think theoretically it is possible. Now, if that is possible and we do create such machines, then all the dangers that you've just described, Professor Kaku, are real. There's no question about that. Especially if such a machine has access to computer infrastructure and data and information that no single human or, you know, all of us together could possibly be able to have access and process. So I think that's the tipping point where technology that we create becomes extremely dangerous. And I can think of other technologies as well, like, for instance, genetic engineering. You know, so therefore, I think we must have mechanisms to control the development of artificial intelligence so we don't reach that point, so we don't play with fire, so we don't set off, you know, a sequence of events that could potentially lead to our extinction.
Okay, well, we began the show by pointing out that we had this dichotomy between Zuckerberg and Musk. robots are dangerous, says Musk, or robots are a helper, says Zuckerberg. My own opinion is it's a matter of time. In the short term, I think Zuckerberg is right. In the long term, let's not be naive, they could become dangerous. Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time. Once again, our special guest was George Zarkadakis. The book is called In Our Own Image. I highly recommend it. So once again, thank you, George, for being on Science Fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, once again, the book is called In Our Own Image, Savior or Destroyer, The History and Future of Artificial Intelligence. And you are listening to Science Fantastic.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
Did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.